Live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on August 13th. 2016. This is program 103 in the WGN Radio Theater series. I'm your host, Carl Amari. And to my right, the vivacious and effervescent Lisa Dimpled Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Great.
In the booth is our producer, Elif Garris. Hey, Elif, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. Sounds good. She's doing good. You're doing good. And I'm doing good. So that's good.
We're triple good.
Yeah, and tonight we have three fantastic radio programs for our listeners. We will start things off with a police procedural, which was probably the most popular of the police procedurals, Dragnet, starring Jack Webb from 1952. Then we'll tune into The Great Gildersleeve, which is my brother Vince, my crabby brother Vince's least favorite radio show. Lisa.
You say that about a lot of things. Krabby Vince doesn't like this one.
And then Escape. So we have Dragnet, Great Gildersleeve, and Escape. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as an eccentric poetry professor accused of the bizarre murder of his wife in the upcoming TV show Trial and Error. And if you are the correct caller and you guess you correctly, you will win two flights for one person at iFly Indoor Skydiving.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And there's more than one location, right?
This is specifically for the Lincoln Park location.
Lincoln Park location. All right, iFly. I did it. It's fun.
I did it. I went to the iFly at Lincoln Park,
right,
and I flew with the instructors there, and what an experience. I should repost those photos. I had such a great time there.
You know where you're flying, Alice? To the moon.
To the moon.
Yeah, that's right. 312-981-7200 is the number. Now, here's a hint. This actor was the bad guy in Cliffhanger.
Kill a few people, they call you a murderer. Kill a million, and you're a conqueror.
312-981-7200. Give us a call. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is show 103 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Kill a few people, they call you a murderer. Kill a million, and you're a conqueror.
And we have Frank on the line from Chicago. Hey, Frank.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good.
Good. So do you recognize that actor?
Yeah, John Lithgow.
You are right. It's John Lithgow, and you are a winner. Frank, I'm so excited. Have you ever tried iFly before?
Oh, a long time ago.
Oh, you're going to be so happy with this. Is indoor skydiving, and you learn to fly, and you experience true human flight. Of course, you've got the help of iFly's certified instructors. So this is at the Lincoln Park location, and you will get two flights, and we hope that you love that. And you can check them out at iFlyWorld.com. I'm going to post some of the pictures from when I went to the Lincoln Park location with my daughter.
And you were flying to the moon?
I went to the moon and back again, and what a great experience. So enjoy it, Frank.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks,
Frank. All right, buddy. Thank you. All right, it's time for Dragnet. Lisa, this was a top police procedural. It came to radio in 1949, lasted all the way to 1957, so it was 9 seasons on the radio. And it was true crime stories of closed cases from the LAPD. And Jack Webb was really the force behind the show. He was the producer, the director, and the star. He was Sergeant Joe Friday, which was an L.A. police detective, and each case was detailed from start to finish, Friday narrating the action along the way. Now, the cool thing about Dragnet was that it was just absolutely filled with sound effects. So listen very carefully. You'll hear sound effect after sound effect after sound effect. They had 5 sound effects experts, where other shows had one or maybe two, but they had five. And interestingly, just the facts, ma'am, never uttered.
Isn't that funny?
By Webb, never.
What, was it in the television show?
You know, there was parodies, like, you know, Stan Freberg parodied the Dragnets, and he would say, just the facts, ma'am. But, you know, really, they never said that.
Not funny.
In the cast, they had supporting radio supporting bass like Frank Lovejoy, Paul Frees, Parley Bear, Harry Bartell, Peggy Weber, who played his mom. Peggy Weber, who was, like, probably 18 years of age when she was on Dragnet,
young,
was playing his mom.
Wow.
Pretty funny, yeah. And then there were movies and, of course, television of Dragnet. 16 seasons on TV.
Wow.
It's a very, very famous show. I think you're going to like this. Let's go back to September 14th, 1952, for The Big Bull, starring Jack Webb. Here's part one of Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. You've just rounded up a vicious gang of thieves. The heavy man is still at large. Your job? Get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, March 6th. It was windy in Los Angeles. We were working a day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Didion. My name's Friday. It was 2:46 p.m. when I got to room 27A. Robbery. Frank?
Yeah, Joe?
How about those subpoenas?
Took them down to the warrant office. They're going to serve them.
Oh, fine. All the follow-ups made, packages in order. That about wraps it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, all but Bentley.
Yeah, nothing from Mac yet.
No. He said he'd call as soon as he heard anything.
Yeah, I know. Be happy when we get him, won't you? He's probably the worst of the lot.
Yeah. Well, according to what Max said, he's in real trouble now. Broke. None of his friends will have anything to do with him. We'll turn him.
I don't think I'll ever understand a guy like Bentley. What makes a man want to beat somebody just for the sake of beating him?
Figure that, we'll have it made.
32 robberies, and just about every one, Bentley's got to work over at least one of the victims. He's pretty vicious.
Now we get him this time, he's through. Probably knows it, too. He, when Mac blows the whistle, probably going to be rough to take, though.
Yeah.
Joe, I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm happy it's over. And let's face it, we were lucky on this one. The guys were gun happy. Taking any longer to get them, they'd have killed somebody, sure.
Maybe so.
Well, in my next day off, I'm going to do nothing but sit, not make a move. My feet are killing me.
Yeah, we had a lot of legwork on this one.
Not just this one, Joe, all of them. I was reading in the magazine the other day about a new kind of arch support. I got to get me a pair of them.
Yeah?
According to the ad, these are going to be just a ticket. Some new kind of rubber, soft, when they mold it to your feet. Place back in Wisconsin.
How'd they do it? They got a place here in L.A.?
No, just a home office. Just a small place, I guess. According to the ad, the whole process is pretty new.
Yeah, well, how do you get this? What is it, a mold?
Yeah, you stand on a piece of paper, hold a bucket of water in each hand, you know, you put all your weight on your feet.
Yeah.
And you draw the outline of your foot on the paper. They make the arch thing up from that.
Well, if you're holding a bucket of water in each hand, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, how do you use the pencil?
What?
Well, a bucket of water in each hand, how are you going to draw?
Yeah.
I get it. Robbery Friday. Oh, hiya, Faye. Yeah, he's here. Oh, how are the kids? Oh, yeah, sure, I'll put him right on. Frank, it's for you. It's your wife. She seems upset.
Thanks, Joe. Hello, honey. Yeah? Yeah, I can, but what's up? Well, can't you tell me now? Well, why not? All right, honey, I'll be right there. Don't worry now, huh? Goodbye.
What's the matter? Something wrong?
I don't know. Faye wants me to come right home. Says something's going on.
Couldn't she tell you about it on the phone?
No, it said something about the phone being tapped.
We went down to the carpool and started over for Frank's house. For the past 3 months, we'd been working on a case involving a gang that had been operating in the city. During that time, they'd committed 32 armed robberies, and in most instances, they'd beaten their victims for no apparent reason. Their ruthless attitude was the most outstanding single point of their M.O. We'd successfully rounded up all members of the gang with one exception, Leroy Bentley, alias the Bull. Bentley was the known heavy man of the gang. In order to successfully prosecute and apprehend any criminal or criminals, the police officer requires the fullest measure of cooperation and assistance that he can obtain from many people, the private citizen and his own associates as well. From the ranks of the private citizen comes one important aid, the informant. The working detective knows that in many cases, his most valuable assistance can often come from his informant. In this particular case, we'd received information that would lead us to Bull Bentley within a matter of days. 3:22 p.m. We arrived at Frank's home.
I'm glad you're home, honey. I'm awfully worried. Hello, Joe.
Oh, yeah. What's the trouble now? What's this all about this phone being tapped?
Well, that's what he said.
Who?
The man who called.
All right, now, honey, can you tell me what this is all about?
I got a phone call just before I called you. It was a man. Said his name was Bull Bensler or Bentley. I didn't get it. He said that you thought you were a smart cop, but if you didn't lay off him, he was going to take care of you where it hurt the most. He threatened the children and me, too. Well, Frank, I don't know what to do.
Go on.
Said the phone was tapped and we were being watched. Said to tell you he wasn't kidding. He didn't have anything to lose. He sounded real mean. I'm frightened. Do you know this man, Frank?
Oh, he is, yeah. We have a warrant for his arrest.
Faye, where are the kids?
Well, Stacy's in her room playing. I called the school for Mike. The teacher said she dismissed the class. He should be home by now. Frank, I don't know. I'm worried about him.
All right, lock the doors. Don't open for anybody. Joe and I will go out and see if we can find Mike.
All right, I'm worried sick about him. He should have been home 20 minutes ago.
I'll go over and call the captain, Frank. Ask him to send a couple of men out, huh?
Thanks, Joe.
Don't worry about it, Faye. 2511, please. Yeah, robbery. Hello, Glenn. Is Captain there? Yeah, it's Friday. I'd like to talk to him. Skipper, this is Friday. I'm out at Frank's house. Oh, Frank Smith, yeah. Bull Bentley called his wife, threatened her and the kids if he didn't lay off. No, said if he didn't lay off. Well, could you send a couple of men out to stand by? Fine. Mike isn't home from school yet, and Frank... That's his little boy. Frank and I are going out to look for him. Yeah, I said he'd be watching the house. Who? Yeah, swell. All right, we'll be in as soon as we find the boy. Right, Skipper. O'Donnell and Stewart from the office will be out, Faye. They'll park the car down the street. Watch for him and let him in, won't you?
All right, Joe. What about it, Frank? You going to lay off this guy?
You want me to?
Please find little Mike.
All right, honey. We'll find him. I'll lock the door and don't open it for anyone but O'Donnell and Stewart when they get here.
All right, dear.
Now, don't worry, huh, honey? We'll find him.
Yeah.
Let's go. Joe, what do you think?
I don't know.
I'll tell you one thing.
Yeah?
I'm scared.
There are two types of criminals that can be counted on to be dangerous. The youngster who becomes easily panicked at the scene of a crime, and the older criminal who will do anything rather than go back to the penitentiary. Bull Bentley was one of these. We knew that he was more than capable of carrying out his threat. His record was one of armed robbery, vicious beatings, and kidnapping. At this particular time, he was wanted for murder in the state of Colorado. The average criminal will blame anyone but himself for his predicament, usually the police officer, and this was so in Bentley's case. He apparently thought that by getting us off his trail, he could go free. Frank and I searched the area around the house. We found his little boy in a vacant lot two blocks from school playing with a group of youngsters. We put him in the car and returned him to his home. Stewart and O'Donnell were at Frank's house and said they'd stay there until they were relieved. 4:36 p.m. Frank and I checked back into the office.
Smith, Friday, in here.
Right.
Come on in.
Find the boy?
Yeah, Skipper out playing with some of the kids in the neighborhood.
All right. Now, what's this all about?
Well, this bunch we just cleaned up?
Yeah.
Bull Bentley called Frank's wife and told her that if Frank didn't lay off of him, he was going to get to him through his family.
What do you plan to do?
Oh, no choice. Get him before he can do anything, I guess.
Frank?
Yes, Skip?
You like to be taken off this assignment?
No, it's a personal matter.
It's up to you. Let's see that your house is covered when you're not home. You keeping the boy away from school?
Yeah, Captain, until this thing's over.
You got any ideas where you can pick Bentley up?
Well, we've covered all the places he's known to hang out.
Want any help?
No, not right now. Just find him fast.
Well, you know he's in town. Figure he's going to stay here?
Well, we don't think he's got much choice. We figure he's broke. He's hot. None of his friends will take a chance on putting him up. He's going to need money.
Better cover the bus depots, train depots, alert the airport detail. Get a couple of 100 mugs printed up on him. Yeah. Distribute them to the beat men and radio cars. Contact Captain Hamilton, the intelligence. He might be able to come up with something.
Our informant said he could turn Bentley for us in a week.
A week's a long time, Joe.
Yeah, I know.
You've covered all his hangouts.
All of them. Nobody's seen him in a couple of days. Just seemed to drop out of sight.
Big town, a lot of people. Sometimes you don't realize how big till you start looking for one man.
Yeah.
Want to get in touch with the boys in the press room, give them the story, see if they'll carry Bull's picture. See Jack Ricketts, he'll put the picture on suspects wanted.
We'll get started on it right now.
You got a silent number, haven't you, Frank?
Yeah, it's unlisted.
How'd Bentley get it? It had to come from somewhere.
Joe and I were talking about that. You know pretty much who we give the numbers out to. About the only one we can figure that'd be in a position to give it to Bentley is Harry McLeod.
Your informant?
Yeah. How long since you've heard from this McCloud?
A couple of days.
Figure maybe he'd cross you, throw in with Bentley?
Well, it's possible. I don't think so, though. He's leveled with us so far.
The number had to come from someplace.
Yeah, well, it sure makes it look like McCloud, doesn't it?
I don't think Mac would give the number away on his own.
Bull could get it. We got 32 people to prove it.
Well, we better get on this thing. Come on, Frank.
Right. Check you later, Skipper. Jill, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, don't worry. We'll get to him.
No, I mean this two-bit thief calling Faye, threatening her.
Try to take it easy. I know how you feel.
Why me, Joe? Bull Bentley's brushed up against 100 different cops in his day. Why me?
Law of averages, I guess. You were handy.
I knew just what to do.
Well, Skipper gave you a choice. If you'd like to go home, nobody'd blame you.
You don't know what it is, Joe. You don't have a family. Something like this can split you in two. Half of you wants to be on the job. The other half is pulling you toward home. Joe, if that cheap punk steps in my front porch, I'm going to lean on him hard.
Now look, Frank, this isn't going to get us anyplace. Let's get over to the photo lab and get this thing moving, huh?
I could just figure it. 4,000 guys in the department and Bentley has to pick me. Joe, why me?
All right, look, Frank. I could try to spell it for you 100 ways and we still wouldn't come out with any kind of a total. I know what you must be going through and I'm sorry it's got to be you. I'm sorry it has to be any cop. You're right about me not having a family, but it's squeezing me just as hard as it is you. You and I both knew when we filled out those application blanks what we were taking on. It's the job, Frank. Maybe I never told you before. Maybe you've been through this too. I don't know. There isn't a day goes by that I'm on the job here that I don't run into something that breaks my heart. Why did Ed Wilson have to get shot down when he and his partner tried to take that guy out of that rooming house over on 8th Street? Why did Olson and his partner have to end up in the PNF ward last week? Why do you have to run the gamut of every human emotion and class of people on earth? Poor or rich, it's all the same. Somebody picks up a gun to knock over the corner gas station, everything hangs in the balance. The minute that thief slips a cartridge into his gun, the gas station attendant, his family, his kids, and every relative he's got slides right onto the short end. Everybody seems to think that wherever crime is concerned, they never get any closer to it than the front page of the morning paper. I know you know this, Frank. For every attempted crime, God only knows how many innocent people are thrown into the balance even before the crime's been committed. That's the way it is, Frank. I'm not trying to tell you anything you don't know, but the minute you passed that exam, you had to make book that something like this could contaminate you just as surely as if you weren't a cop. I guess it's almost a legacy. Nobody's found a vaccine for crime. Nobody's immune. And it's worse with you and me because we know better than to think we can't be touched. We know we can. We invite it every time we roll on a call, every time we pick somebody up, every time a guy gets out of line. It's the job, Frank. I didn't mean to give you an academy lecture, but if it's any comfort, I'm with you. I know just how you feel, and so do 4,000 other guys right down here.
Yeah. I guess maybe we better get moving, huh?
Yeah, come on.
Guess we better get moving, huh, Lise?
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh?
He goes, huh? Yeah.
Just the facts, man.
Yeah.
Just the facts, man.
Yeah, that's the first portion of Dragnet. Good episode from September 14th, 1952, called The Big Bull, and it stars Jack Webb. And great, great, great show. We'll get back to it in a little bit. All right, welcome back. To the that's welcome back music right there. I like that. It's welcome back. Kinda,
that's not
hey.
Welcome back Connor.
No,
music.
I didn't say it was welcome back Connor. If it was welcome back Connor music, I would have said, "Hey, that's welcome back Connor." Music.
I thought that's where you were heading.
Yes. No. You know, for once, you didn't read my mind correctly.
Wow. You know, I'll have to try harder.
We've been
in the
working
future.
Together a long time, Lisa. Yeah. You can read my mind. Most,
I know that.
Most of the time, it's a little scary.
I know.
It's a little bit scary, and I would not want to be you reading my mind.
I don't want to be me reading.
I don't
want to
be
either.
Me reading my mind.
I don't think you know what's coming next.
11:35 in the evening, Saturday evening, and it was kind of traffic-y getting here today.
It was a lot of traffic-y. There's a lot of people in the city.
There,
I don't know what they're all doing, but
yeah, I always leave a little earlier on Saturday because the traffic. I don't want to get here and you're in the middle of introducing one of these shows.
No problem.
Then,
don't you worry. We got you covered.
Management says, "Hey, Lisa, you did a great job. We don't need that Carl Amari guy anymore."
Right. I dream about that every night, Carl.
That hors d'oeuvre guy, that calamari guy, we don't need him anymore.
That's a recurring dream of mine.
Don't need him. So I always thought it was interesting, Dragnet. I was talking to Peggy Weber one time, and Peggy Weber played his mom. We were talking about this. She was a young actress at the time. She
now,
got
didn't
this
he live
gig.
With her?
He lived.
Yeah.
Well, not he lived with Peggy Weber, but he lived
with his mom.
Yeah. The character of Sergeant Joe Friday lived with his mom, and he'd come home and be like, "Hey, Mom, you know, what'd you make for dinner, this and that?" And she would be like, "Oh, you know, Joseph." You know, she'd call him or whatever she'd call. I don't remember. But Joseph, because his name was Joe Friday.
Joe Friday,
and she's
right.
Like, "Oh, Joseph, there's some stew in the oven, you know, or in the refrigerator." But She told me that Jack Webb was, he just, every facet of the show was his baby, right? Yeah. And he was in radio a long time. He did a lot of things, and he was primarily an actor in radio. But then this show, he was like, this was his baby, right?
Yeah.
He was the
director,
director,
the producer.
He didn't write him, but he was the producer and the star. Well, he had this technique, and I told you earlier, there was five sound effects men on Dragnet. But he had this technique that she said that only he did. And all the radio shows that she worked on, nobody else did this but Jack Webb. He would have all the actors in the room, the big studio at NBC. He would take the microphones. He'd have like three microphones, and he would turn the pots, as they called them, all the way up to 10, right? And then he'd have the actors standing like 4 feet away from the microphone, but they were up really loud. And he liked that feel, as opposed to the actors being right there, working the microphones. They were all standing around the microphones, including him, and they were just sort of acting, right? And he felt that he felt the room noise and the ambiance of the people in the room made it more realistic. And you can actually pick up on that if you listen very closely. And the quality of these dragnets are really great because we have all the master recordings of them. So you can kind of hear the room noise and the people, and it doesn't sound like anybody's working the microphone. They're all about the same 4 feet away from the microphone. She thought that was really, you know, interesting, an interesting technique. And she said nobody else that she knew of did that, but Jack Webb invented that, and he that's what he did all the time they did the Dragnet radio show. So let's go back and listen to the conclusion now from September 14th, 1952. This is called The Big Bull, and it stars Jack Webb on Dragnet.
We took the mugshot of Bentley to the photo lab and asked them to run off 200 copies. We checked with the reporters in the press room, and they promised us full cooperation. Jack Ricketts told us that he'd put the picture on the air the next day. Frank called home and found that there'd been no further calls from Bentley. 6:17 p.m., we started to look for Harry McLeod, our informant. We checked his hotel, but the clerk told us he hadn't been in all afternoon. We started checking his known hangouts. In fear of burning McLeod, we were unable to ask for him by name, which made it necessary for us to canvass each individual place. 9:28 p.m., we located McLeod in a small bar that was known to be frequented by thieves. We walked over to the bar and sat down next to him. We ordered a drink. At the first opportunity, without arousing suspicion, we told McLeod we wanted to talk to him and that we'd meet him down the street, two blocks west. We left the bar, got in the car, and drove to the meeting place. 20 minutes later, McLeod arrived, got in the back seat, and we drove away.
Want to get the radio, Joe?
Yeah.
What's the matter with you guys? I told you I got in touch with him and I had something for you. You trying to get me burned? Now,
take it easy, Mac. Just a couple of things we want to know.
Well, I'm on your side. You guys know that. I've always leveled with you, haven't I?
Yeah.
Well, then what's this bit? You walk into that joint, you know what goes on in there, and you pull me out. Good chance somebody could have seen you, you know.
Yeah, we know, Mac. Have you seen Bentley?
No, I told you I'd let you know when I turned him.
Now, don't snow us, Mac. This is important. Have you seen him?
If I saw him, I'd have called you. You know that, don't you? I'd have called you guys. I told you once I'd finger him for you. I haven't called. I haven't seen him. It's that simple. What's the big rush about getting Bentley, anyway? He ain't going nowhere.
Now, look, Mac, we got a personal interest in this thing. This isn't just robbery. Bull's been calling Frank's wife, saying he was going to kill her and the kids. You know he'd do it. Now, how about it?
I didn't know it was like that. Bull's mean enough to do it,
too. Well, that's how it is. Now, I'll ask you once more. Have you seen him?
Yeah.
When?
Day before yesterday, Sunday morning. Saw him down at Marty's.
How come he didn't call us?
I couldn't. Honest, I couldn't. He came in and asked me for some dough. I told him I didn't have any. I tried to stall him till I could get to a phone.
Yeah?
Didn't work. He wouldn't wait. Got mad when I couldn't help him out.
You say anything about a meet?
Just said he'd get in touch with me.
Yeah.
He was real sore when I couldn't let him have any dough. But I told him, I said, look, boy, you know I want to help, but I just haven't got it. That's what I said.
Yeah?
Wasn't kidding either. Things been pretty rough. Say, you guys couldn't see your way clear, could you? Sawbuck to tide me over, huh?
Well, you got me at the wrong time, Mac. I'm tapped.
How about you, Smith?
Well, if you gotta have it, I got $10 I've been saving for a pair of shoes.
Yeah, I sure appreciate it. You guys know that.
Yeah, we know. You got any idea how Bull might have gotten Frank's home phone?
No, not the slightest.
You sure you didn't give it to him?
Joe, you've known me for a lot of years. Would I do a thing like that after the way you guys treated me?
Well, that's what we're trying to find out, Mac.
I should get a little insulted at that. You guys figuring out about
me. Oh, now come off it, Mac. Did you give him the number?
No, I swear to you I didn't.
All right. You got any ideas where Bull might be hiding?
Not in particular. Check usual places?
Yeah, we looked through them all.
And you know as much as I do. He did say he looked me up in a couple of days.
You see where he was going when he left you?
No, just walked out of Marty's. I saw a friend of his yesterday, though.
Yeah?
The guy said he'd seen Bull Sunday night.
Say what he wanted?
Money. Said he'd try to tap him for some dough to get out of town.
His friend help him?
He didn't give him any money. He gave him something else, though.
Yeah?
He gave him a gun.
listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action.
Before we left Mac, he furnished us with the name of the man who'd given the gun to Bull Bentley. We recognized the name Dave Slater as a small-time hoodlum who'd do anything to make a dollar as long as he himself was reasonably safe in doing it. Mac told us of several places where we might find him. The most likely place was a pool room on North Main Street. Slater had numerous arrests, most of them for being drunk and for acting as a lookout for gambling games. He was a type of thief that can be found in every large city, always on the fringe of criminal operations, but never directly involved in the crime itself. We checked several of the places Mac told us about, but we couldn't come up with Slater. We checked the pool room. The manager was evasive and at first appeared reluctant to talk. We informed him that we knew Slater would be back and that we'd wait for him. The manager asked us to come to the back room with him. He told us that Slater had said that he was going down to the all-night hamburger stand on the corner to get something to eat. We found Slater sitting at the counter.
Call this thing a hamburger? All I can see is a bun. I'd be ashamed to sell a thing like this lousy deal 35 cents for nothing.
Slater?
Yeah, well, something you want?
Police officer Slater, we want to talk to you.
What about?
Bull Bentley.
Bentley? Never heard of
him. We got information you do know him pretty well.
Yeah? You tell your pigeon he's lying. I never heard of the guy. Now, let me finish eating.
We want to talk to you, Slater. You want to make it here, or would you rather go downtown?
Can't you see I'm eating? Now, let me finish. I got nothing to tell you. I don't know any Bull Bentley. Now, lay off, huh?
Come on, you can think better than an empty stomach, Slater. Let's go.
Frank and I took Slater out of the restaurant and put him in the car. Once he was in custody, his attitude changed completely. He said he wanted to help us, but that he didn't know Bull Bentley. 10:44, we got back to the city hall.
I want to stop by the office, Joe. Call home.
All right, I'll be in the interrogation room. You tell us, Skipper.
Yeah.
Come here, Slater.
Yeah.
Sit down.
Sure. Look, I told you I want to help you guys out, but I don't know anything. If I did, I'd let you know.
All right, come off it, Slater. Where's Bentley?
Look, I keep telling you, I don't know any Bentley.
Where are you living now?
Solly Hotel, West 5th.
How long you been there?
A couple of days.
You working now?
Yeah, a little. Odd job now and then. You know, nothing steady.
What do you call an odd job, Slater?
Oh, you know, sweep out the pool room, rack the balls for him.
Yeah, sure. Now, look, we've known you for 8 years. You never worked a day in that time. Now, how about Bentley? We got a personal interest in him. We want him. We want him bad.
Look, I tell you, I don't know any Bentley.
Anything new?
Yeah, Joe, he called a couple more times tonight. Last time at 10:30, scared Faye half to death.
Yeah.
Said he knew Mike was home. He knew we were looking for him. Said if we don't stop, it'll get to the kids. Said it didn't matter how many cops we had around the house, he'd get to him. Faye's almost hysterical. O'Donnell called the doctor.
Yeah.
How about Slater? He come up with anything?
No. Still says he doesn't know him.
Doesn't know him, huh? Listen, punk, let's you and me get straightened out. What happens to me is one thing. What happens to my family is another. They don't pay me enough money to jeopardize my family. Now, you get this straight. When punks like you and your trigger-happy friends can threaten my family, then something's got to give, and it's not going to be me.
Yeah, but I told you.
Look, wipe that silly grin off your face, Slater. You feel nice and safe there, don't you? You know, as long as you're in custody, we got to take care of you. Well, maybe you'd like to know that if I have to, I'll take this badge off and walk up one side of you and down the other. Now, I want to know where Bentley is, and I want to know now. We're not stumbling around in the dark. We know you gave him a gun. Let me tell you this, mister. Mark it down. If anything happens to my wife or my kids, you can't run fast enough to get away, because I'll nail you hard.
All right, Frank.
He's getting pretty tough, isn't he?
I'm just telling you how you stand. Now, come on, where's Bentley?
I told you, I don't know Bentley.
All right. Let's get everything out of your pockets. Get it on the table.
Well, there's nothing much. Here, change, keys, and a nail file, address book, my handkerchief, comb, wallet, cigarettes, and matches. That's all.
I'm going to shake him down, Frank.
Yeah.
I told you that's all.
Right,
now, what are you looking
still.
For?
Now, push your luck, Slater. He's clean, Joe.
How much money you got in your wallet?
I don't know. Double sawbuck, maybe?
It's a funny thing. You guys never work, but you always got money. All right, take the money out and count it, Slater.
Why? What's that going to prove?
Take it out and count it.
All right. 10, 20, 25, 26, 27, 37, another 5, 42 bucks. I didn't know I had that much.
All right. Put the money in your pocket.
That all the money in your wallet?
Yeah, that's it.
Let's see the wallet.
Here. There's nothing in it. A couple of cards, that's all.
Yeah. Let's see here. A couple of pawn tickets. Picture. Who's the girl?
Babe, I met in Dago. You don't know her. She's not in the rackets. Married now. I haven't seen her in a year.
Then why are you carrying her picture?
Always kind of liked her. She had class. Real nice broad.
You said you didn't know Bull Bentley?
That's what I said.
How about Leroy Bentley?
Nah.
You know anybody at all named Bentley?
Look, I told you I don't know any Bentley. How many times do I have to tell you?
You know anybody by the name of Bull?
I don't know anybody named Bull. I don't know anybody named Bentley.
Yeah. Take a look, Joe.
Now, maybe you can explain this, then.
Yeah, what's that?
Bar tab in your wallet. His name Bull written on it. How about it, Slater? Who's Bull?
I don't remember that. Probably something I picked up a long time ago. I don't remember it.
Tab's dated March 4th, day before yesterday. Your memory must be getting pretty bad, huh?
I got nothing to say.
Well, Frank, you want to check the business office and see who this number's listed to?
Yeah, Joe, right away.
All right, fine. I'm going to tell you something, boy. This is a rotten deal. The law protects people like you. You're lying. We know it, and you know it, too. You know Bentley. You know where he is. What's more, we know you gave him a gun Sunday night, the same date on that tab. I'll tell you what we're going to do, Slater. You're a real wise guy. You talk fast. We're going to get Bull. Maybe not tonight, maybe not tomorrow, but we'll get him. And when we do, we're going to tell him that you blew the whistle on him. We're going to put him in the same cell with you. I'd like to hear you talk your way out of that.
You wouldn't do that.
Don't make book on it.
Look, he's a mean guy. He'll kill me.
Thought you didn't know him.
All right, so I know him. But you wouldn't do that, would you? Put me in with him?
Where is he, Slater?
You going to tell him I turned him in?
We're making no deals. Where is he?
I don't know where he is now.
You know where he'll be?
Yeah, I was supposed to meet him there tonight at the bar down on West 7th. He's got a friend works there, feeds him.
He'll be there tonight, huh?
Yeah, I said if I meet him, he'd pay me for the gun, $75.
What kind of gun is it?
A 38. A good one, too. Worth more than $75, but I needed the money.
Why'd you get the gun?
Well, you'll find out anyway. I might as well tell you. Prowled the car, found under the seat. I found out later it belonged to a guy in the vice squad. Probably real sore about it.
Could be Joe Barr on West 7th, place called the Hamilton Inn.
Yeah, that's it. He'll be there.
All right, Slater, let's go.
Well, where are you taking me?
You're going to jail.
No, you can't win. Should have known you. Hey, do me a favor, huh?
What's that?
Talk to the jailer, make him give me a cell by myself.
We handcuffed Slater to a chair in the robbery office until we got back to book him. 12:32 a.m., Frank and I left the city hall for the Hamilton Inn on West 7th Street. Slater had told us that he was to meet Bull Bentley between 1 and 1:30. When we got there, there were a half a dozen people in the place. We checked the bar and the men's restroom, but Bentley wasn't around. We went back to the car, drove down the street to a closed service station, and parked where we could keep both doors of the restaurant under surveillance. 12:50, 1 a.m., 1:15. We waited. 1:35.
Joe, that him?
I don't know. It might be. Let's take a look. All right, you want to take the side door? I'll try the front.
Right.
All right.
I don't see him, Joe.
Wait a minute. That him? Going in the phone booth back there?
Yeah.
All right, come on. I'll get him.
Bentley.
Yeah?
Watch it, Joe!
Frank, I'll shake him down.
Yeah. Who told you? Who blew the whistle? That bum McCloud. It was him. He was the only one who knew.
He gave you my telephone number?
Yeah, he did. And he runs to you and cops out. Should have known better. I give him $20 for it.
Well, that figures.
What do you mean?
We gave him 10 not to.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On June 12th, the hearing was held in the district attorney's office. Leroy W. Bentley was released to the Colorado authorities for prosecution on a charge of murder. A hold was placed on him for the state of California in the event he is paroled. He was convicted and is now serving a life sentence in the Colorado State Penitentiary without possibility of parole. Although David R. Slater was guilty of aiding and abetting a felony, a complaint could not be issued due to the fact it could not be proved that Slater knew Bentley was an ex-convict when he gave him the gun. He was filed on for petty theft in Division 7.
He pled guilty and was sentenced to 90 days in the county jail. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Herb Ellis, June Whitley, Jack Crucian. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's Dragnet, going back to September 14th, 1952. That was heard on NBC radio called The Big Bull. Originally, that was sponsored by Chesterfield. We removed all of the Chesterfield commercials because you're not supposed to play cigarette commercials on the radio, so we don't. We are not scoff laws
we're
over here.
We're following the rules this
we
time?
We follow the rules.
Just this time.
I'm all about the rules.
No, you're
Lisa.
Not.
And that was a good show. Jack Webb starred in that, of course, as Sergeant Joe Friday. Herb Ellis in the cast, June Whitley, Jack Crucian. It was written by John Robinson, and the music was by the great Walter Schumann. He did that. It was called the Dragnet theme, that bump, yep. Ba-dum, bump. Hal Gibney doing the announcing on that. Let's take a break. Then it's much more here on the WGN Radio Theater. It's hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. It's midnight, which means it's Sunday. Happy Sunday, Lisa.
Happy Sunday, Carl.
Happy Sunday, Elif.
Happy Sunday, Carl and Lisa.
Happy Sunday, Elif.
When we come back here tonight, we have three more classic radio shows. We have The Green Hornet, we have Suspense, and the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show. So that'll be fun. When we come back here.
Did you know my mom was named after Alice Faye?
I did know that. Yeah.
It's a true
Alice
story. Alice
Matenke.
Faye. Well, it's Alice Faye, though. Yeah, I'm just saying. Her mom named her after Alice Faye.
I know. So they must have, your grandparents must have really liked Phil Harris and Alice
Either
Faye.
Either that or they didn't like.
No, I would imagine they liked that. What did they name you after? Lisa. Let's see. Lisa. Who's a famous Lisa? Is there a famous Lisa besides you? Because you're pretty famous.
Lisa Kudrow. Well, she's young.
Yeah, she's kind of younger than I am, I think.
Maybe she's the same age as you.
She's a little younger, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Lisa. Lisa.
Lisa. I'm trying to think.
Lisa Lynn? What? No.
I honestly am trying to think if there's a Lisa from the 1940s or 50s.
I don't think that was a 40s name, maybe. That, yeah. You know, names go through periods where they're up and down. And I think this is like a, 80s name, like when I was born.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. I'm sure our listeners will call us and say, what about Lisa this? You can text us, 312-981-7200, if Elif would ever get the text line going.
Yeah, if she gets it going for me, I promise to text
you back. I did that half an hour
you
ago. You know, you just have to move the mouse and your screen will pop up. You
there
just
you
haven't
go.
Moved the
no,
mouse.
No, I don't believe that to
would
be
you
the
move
case.
Them, would
I'm
you
moving
move
the mouse. Sorry, Elif.
Move Mickey, would you?
Sorry.
All right, so in this
Slacker.
Hour, we have The Great Gildersleeve. You're going to like that. With Hal Perry from 1942 in our third hour of this morning. We'll tune into Escape. So good comedy and then a good drama sort of mystery, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actress stars in the upcoming TV show Powerless as an insurance adjuster specializing in damage caused by crime-fighting superheroes. And if you are a winner, you win two flights for one person at iFly Indoor Skydiving at Lincoln Park.
Wow, 312-981-7200. That's a terrific prize.
It is
we
a
have
lot
great
of fun there.
Prizes here on the WGN Radio Theater.
But of course.
I wouldn't mind winning that. I'd go and fly around.
I went there and flew all night. They had to throw me out of
it's
there.
A lot of fun.
I just kept saying, okay, one more time. I need one more time.
You have some pull over there with iFly. What's it? Do they? You got these tickets, right?
I did. You just got to know the right people.
And they're like, hey, it's Lisa Wolf from
they
the WGN.
They just kind of fell at my feet and said, what can I do for you, Lisa Wolf? Because you are the first Lisa that's famous. So that gave
Right. That is a good prize, though. 312-981-7200. All right, here's a hint. This actress was the star of the film Gimme, with G-I-M-M-E, Gimme Shelter.
I ran away. Went to find my mother and try to stay with her for a while. Things got real bad and I had to go.
All right. There you have it. If you know who that actress is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
You are listening to the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
I ran away. Went to find my mother and try to stay with her for a while. Things got real bad and I had to go.
Let us talk to Paul from Woodstock. Hi, Paul.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Do you recognize that voice?
Well, I got it from the clue, a little more than the voice, but I think it's Vanessa Hudgens.
It is. You are right. You know, I did not see that movie. The only time I really know her was from...
you didn't see Gimme Shelter?
I never even heard, of Gimme Shelter. She was in... High School Musical with Zac Efron.
Yeah.
I think that was her claim to fame, I think, and she was beautiful. But you are a winner. I hope that you can make it to Lincoln Park and go to iFly Indoor Skydiving. You can learn to fly, and you can really experience true human flight. And, of course, you've got some help from the iFly certified instructors. And you can check them out at iFlyWorld.com. But you, Paul, get two flights for free, and we hope that you have a great experience at iFly.
And I should be flying high with that prize. Thank you.
Exactly. And we hope you let us know how it is. I had a great time doing it, so I hope you do too.
And another famous Lisa was Lisa Bonet, by the way.
Oh, yes, that's Lisa true. Bonet. She's younger than me, too.
Yeah.
We need to find one. Just like
I'm trying to, Paul, I'm trying to figure out a Lisa from like the 1940s or 50s. I don't know.
Or 60s.
If I know a that's interesting. I'm sure there are.
The other one was Lisa Hartman, too.
Lisa Hartman. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, let's just go with me. That I'll be.
That you're the most famous
I'll be the most famous Lisa.
Good.
For now.
All right.
Yep.
Well, enjoy
let's
your prize, Paul. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Take care. All right, so this is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Lisa to my right. We have Aleph Garris, our producer, of course, with us on a Saturday. Now it's Sunday, though. We talked about this last week, that we're here 3 days. We're here on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Yeah.
For two shifts.
How many?
Two mints in one.
Well, we'll come here as many times as they let us.
That's right. We'll take more gigs. We like being on the air.
We love to be here. So they send us over and we say yes.
You know, I have over 100,000 radio shows. I did the math the other day. Over 100,000 radio
shows. Take us a while to get through all those.
So if we went 24/7 here on WGN, we wouldn't run out for many years.
We've got something to strive toward that way.
Right. Time for the great Gildersleeve. I love Gildersleeve.
I do too.
My crabby brother Vince does not like Gildersleeve.
Well, of course, that's why. He's crabby.
I absolutely love the great Gildersleeve. Great comedy. Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve was a character that was first heard on the Fibber McGee and Molly show. Remember? They would always have these crazy characters coming over to 79 Wistful Vista, ringing the bell, coming in. Well, Gildersleeve was his next-door neighbor, and they would kind of feud a little bit, Fibber and Gildy. And in 1941, on August 31st, Gildersleeve spun off.
Right.
It was the very first spinoff of any radio show, spun off for his own show, sponsored by Kraft. It was also heard on NBC. Fibber was on NBC. And it was sponsored by Kraft Foods. And he moved from Wistful Vista to Summerfield, and he became the town water commissioner and the town's most eligible bachelor, which was a lot of fun because he was always dating girls. Man after my own heart.
You can relate to that.
Right. He was raising his orphaned niece, Marjorie, and nephew, Leroy. And there was a cook by the name of Bertie that was in the household as well. And it was the first show of a single parent raising children, Lisa. And then, of course, you know, Family Affair years later did that. There were some other ones, too. In 1950, Hal Perry was offered a big contract to leave the Gildersleeve series. And he did. He went and starred in a series called Honest Harold, which nobody has ever heard of. And it was a complete flop. And I think he was bummed out that he decided to do that, because they brought in Willard Waterman, who sounded so much like Hal Perry. And he played the character from 1950 all the way to 1957, and then in 1955 made the transition to television. So Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, a character that was kind of originated by Hal Perry, he never got to air it, play it after 1950.
Right.
So we have an episode now of Gildersleeve from January 18th, 1942. I think you'll love this. It stars all of the regular characters. Lillian Randolph is Birdie. Walter Tetley is Leroy on this. Here's part one now of The New Bed, starring Hal Perry as the great Gildersleeve.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve. Yeah. Each week at this time, from Hollywood, California, Kraft presents Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by Leonard L. Levinson. And now let's visit our friend, the great Gildersleeve, who is about to visit a local furniture store in search of a new bed as a surprise gift for his niece, Marjorie.
Now, I like that pink canopy bed in the window, Leroy. How about buying that one for Marjorie?
Oh, no. Who'd help her put the top down on nice nights?
Yes. Leroy, that isn't a convertible bed. Let's go in. I know the owner of this store.
Well, well, if it ain't my old friend Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. Hello, Stanza.
Slepperman.
My, my, you're a sight for good eyes.
Yeah.
Why, you're the very motion picture of hell. In fact, a double feature.
Yes.
And don't tell me this is little Theodore.
I won't. This is little Leroy.
My, my, how you've jumped up. I remember when I used to bounce you on my knees, sonny boy.
Yes, and about one more year, he'll be able to return the favor, Slepperman.
Guilty, my pal. You took the words right out of my bridge work.
Yes.
Well, let's not stand around on our ceremonies. Will you have a chair? Or were you thinking of buying a Davenport?
Well, we were interested in beds. Something in a little slumber number.
Oh, hachi-pachi. Just follow me, please.
Okay. Say, Unc, what's the name of this chair that the man is sleeping in?
That's a Morris chair. Oh, hello, Morris.
Hello, la, la, la.
Slepperman's kid brother. He's 40 years old and still a problem child.
Gee, what kind of a clock is this, Unc?
That's a grandfather's clock, Leroy. And don't open it. There are no grandfathers inside.
Well, here we are. I'm telling you confidentially, Truckee, when it comes to sleeping furniture, this store is wide awake.
Yes, I know. Leroy, quit jumping up and down on that bed.
Ah, leave him to be, Guilty. Let the boy have fun. All right, so suppose he does break a couple of springs. So I'll put it on your bill.
Yeah. Young man, come down from there.
Okay, Uncle Mort. I was only making a test hop.
Yes.
What a kiddie, huh? He's a regular Mickey Looney.
Mickey Looney.
Guilty? What kind of a bed would you like to buy if I'm not taking too much priority?
Yes. It's for Marjorie, you know, Leroy's sister. She's away at a Red Cross training school, and Leroy and I thought we'd surprise her by fixing up her bedroom.
What an uncle. An angel without wings.
Yeah, I was grounded.
I wish I had an uncle like you got, Leroy.
Leroy, Mr. Slepperman is talking. Leroy, where are you? Oh, young man, come out of that grandfather's clock.
Okay. Gee, that makes a keen place for hiding.
Go ahead, Leroy. Keep it up. I know another keen place for hiding.
Don't be too harsh on the boy, Truckee. Remember, you were a pickaninny once yourself.
Yes. Look, Sam, do you want me to make up my mind about that bed now, or would you rather have me sleep on it?
Okay. How about this creation in solid mahogany with a waterfall design? It's very excruciating.
Yeah. I don't know. It looks a little too stodgy.
Stodgy is the latest trend.
Gee, why don't you buy this dandy double-deck bunk bed for Marjorie, Unc?
No, my boy. What we want is something dainty and feminine, like, say, that pink canopy model in the window.
Ah, now you're talking with gas.
Well, what's cooking with the bed?
Come on. We can step into the window and give it a closer inspection.
Yeah, come on, Leroy. Get away from that folding bed before it traps you.
Coming, Uncle Mort.
Right up here, Guilty. Careful passing that statue. Inhale. Thank you.
Yeah.
And look at that bed. Beautiful, ain't it? I'm telling you, this is a bed of roses.
It is?
Yes. And it's her own exclusive design.
Yeah, whose?
My daughter, Rose's.
Yeah. Well, she certainly did a splendid job. Is it as comfortable as it looks?
Then just try it. Lay right down. Go ahead. Take a sample snooze.
Yeah, I will, Sam. Yes. Feels very soft.
You see, you float around like you're 99% pure. And why not? It's got a deep sleep mattress, and it's got a double box springs.
And I know something else it's got, Unc.
Yeah, what's that, Leroy?
It's got half the people in town staring in the window at you, too.
What? Oh, yeah, come on, let's get out of here. Silly thing for me to do. Say, Sam, how much is that bed?
Well, just the way it stands with that beautiful speed match, a spread, I'm asking, and it cost me, but I'll let you have it for, one price, $120.
$120, eh? Well, I wasn't figuring on spending quite that much, but, Say, how much will you give me in trade for Marjorie's present bed?
Well, it's pretty old.
How do you know? You haven't seen it.
Well, I have a very vivid imagination.
Yeah. He's right. Why, it must be, 50 years old.
50? Why, Leroy, it's at least 150. A very graceful four-poster, Slepperman. Really an antique.
I'm sorry, but what you people call antiques is by me strictly secondhand.
But this is really better than secondhand.
Yeah, it must be sixth or seventh hand.
Yep. Leroy, you get back in the grandfather's clock. Now, Sam, I'll let you in on a little secret. According to an unconfirmed rumor, that bed was slept in by George Washington.
Recently?
Huh?
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do, Gildy. Suppose you make me a price for that old bed.
Fine. Now, let me see. How about
$20? $20? You're a hard man, Gildingsleeve.
Hard? Why, that's pretty soft for you.
Well, it's a deal. Shake. And now that it's set, I don't mind saying that I would have gone as high as $25.
Oh, you would, eh? Well, I don't mind confessing, Sammy, old kid, that I would have taken as low as $10. Hello? No, Marjorie's out of town. I'll tell her you called. Who is this? John? Which John? Oh, you must be a new John, yes. Goodbye. John Lewis. Oh, Bertie.
Come as quick as I can. Yes, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Which is today's stack of messages for Marjorie?
The little one, the big, thick pile is from yesterday.
I never saw anything like it. That phone is busier than a burglar in a blackout. Everybody wants Marjorie.
Yes, and it's worse when I'm here all alone. Hardly no time to do the cleaning or the cooking. I'm busy with my social secretary.
Yeah.
There's only one thing I hope.
What's that, Bertie?
That Miss Marjorie will be able to read all my writing on them messages.
Why?
Because I can't.
Yes. Nevertheless, you take care of the rest of them, Bertie. I want to see if those furniture men have the new bed set up yet. Ah, hello, Leroy.
Hello, Uncle Mort.
Hello, men. I see you've removed the old bed and have the new one all put together already.
Oh, yeah. Morris is testing it now. How is it, Morris? See? It's okay. Come on, Morris. Oh, look at him in the arms of Orpheus.
You mean Morpheus. Orpheus is the music god. And if that's music, well...
Morris Schlepperman, get up. I know what'll wake him. Hey, Morris, time to go to bed.
It is. I'm coming, Frank. Wait for me.
That Morris should hibernate for the winter. Say, doesn't that bed look grand? Oh, Bertie, come on in here.
Call me, Mr. Gildersleeve. Well, ain't that the cutest looking little bed?
Yeah.
I can hardly wait to see Miss Marge climb in and hit the hay.
This bed cost $120, Bertie, and that ain't hay. Oh, you better see who's at the door, Bertie.
Yes, if it ain't one thing, it's the same thing.
Throw that bedspread across, Leroy, so we can get an idea of how it looks made up.
Okay.
That's it, thanks. Why, it's as pretty as a new $20 bill. As six $20 bills.
There's a Miss Van Scudder to see you, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Van Scudder? I wonder who that can be. Well, I better go see.
Mr. Gildersleeve?
Yes?
I'm Patricia Van Scudder, the interior decorator. I'm to redo Marjorie's bedroom.
Already? Why, Leroy and I just finished a redo job 5 minutes ago.
Oh, there must be some mistake. I received a letter from Marjorie yesterday asking me to decorate her room.
Oh, I see. Well, Marjorie didn't know about our little effort. It was to be a surprise.
Well, if it's anything like the usual man's idea of a girl's room, it's probably more of a shock than a surprise.
Yes.
Hadn't we better look at the room in question now?
Oh, yes, of course. Excuse me. This way, Miss Van Scudder. Right in here. Hello, this is my nephew, Leroy. Leroy, this is Miss Van Scudder.
Hello.
How do you do? Well, I'm genuinely surprised. Why, this is a charming, charming room.
Oh, you like it?
Yes. Why, I can hardly believe you two did this. It's really quite lovely.
Well, all we did was to buy it.
Quiet, Leroy. Let's hear Miss Van Scudder.
Well, really, I'd leave it just as it is, except for one thing.
And what's that?
The bed.
But that's the only thing...
Leroy, please. What did you say, Miss Van Scudder?
The bed.
Wrong?
Oh, but definitely. The color clashes with everything else. And the style. Oh, that style.
Yeah, some style, isn't it?
Oh, yes, quite horrible.
Now, see here, Miss Van Scudder.
Why, to put it in this room is almost as bad as mixing Empire with Rococo.
Hank, what's Empire and Rococo?
Shh, I think they're a couple of racetracks. I see. Then you don't think that Marjorie would like the bed, eh?
I know she wouldn't be happy in this overgrown bassinet.
Who's that? Oh, she wouldn't, eh?
No. However, I'd be happy to go out and find you the proper bed for this room.
You would? Well, maybe that would solve our little problem.
Well, I'd be glad to. Meanwhile, get rid of this pink atrocity, won't you?
You're still sure it won't do, eh?
Oh, dear, no. Why, I'd just as soon put Hepplewhite next to Chippendale.
Oh, we couldn't do that, could we?
Why not, Unc?
They don't speak.
Oh. Well, I must be going now. Don't trouble to show me to the door. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, our pretty pink bed, Leroy. Now I'll have to send it back.
Too bad, Uncle Mort.
Yes. Strange how many things there are in this world you could enjoy if only the experts didn't tell you they're no good.
All right, that's the first portion of The Great Gildersleeve, January 18th, 1942, an episode called The New Bed, starring Hal Perry as Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. Do we have a break, or can we go right to news?
We do have a break.
Let's do that, then. Hey, Raj.
Yo.
I was in Dallas last week. To drive my daughter back home because she was out there doing an internship for Ford. And yeah. I had an extra day, and I decided to solve the Kennedy assassination.
Did you do it?
Yes. Figured it out.
Oh, great. Who did it?
I spent some time out there looking around Dallas and the Dealey Plaza and
The grassy knoll?
The grassy knoll. Went over to the grassy knoll. I checked it all out. I figured it all out.
You did? What's...
It was not you.
Oh, phew.
You know,
man,
so don't worry about it.
I've been worrying for like 30 some odd years.
And it wasn't
years.
Me because that was the year I was born. I was like 2 months old when that happened.
Can't
in November.
Rule out everything.
November of 63. I'm gonna reveal my findings probably a little later in the show. So I want to keep you in suspense.
The teaser.
I'm very much in suspense.
I figured the whole Jack Ruby thing out.
Wait a minute.
The whole
you solved both of them?
I solved the Jack Ruby whole thing.
Uh-huh.
I figured the whole thing out with Jack Ruby and Oswald and the grassy knoll and Connolly and the magic bullet. Got it. I figured the whole thing out.
Wow.
Yeah. So stick
You're
around.
You're pretty good.
Stick around for that.
And I want everybody to know while we have a second that next Saturday is Carl's birthday.
Oh.
So we have some special surprises.
All right. So Lisa and I... during the week, privately, we will concoct some sort of event.
Yes, we're concocting.
Make sure it's spectacular.
No, of course it's spectacular.
And very expensive.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
No dollar will be unspent.
Right. If you want to impress me, spend a lot of money.
Oh, always.
Do you want an Olympic gold medal? We can
I would
maybe
like
steal
that.
One
yeah.
for
I'll
you.
I'll cut one out of the magazine for
yeah.
you.
I want an Oscar. I want an Oscar, a Tony, and an Emmy. That's
I've got
my
the Emmy.
That's all I want. That's all I want in life.
I've got the Emmy.
And a Walk of
if
Fame.
You want it.
And a Walk of Fame star. That'd be
outside
nice too,
right
huh?
here.
Oh really?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Right.
One of these
Wait,
days.
Wait, you want it here or do you want it in Hollywood?
Well, are you kidding here?
Oh, all
that'd
right.
be great.
Okay,
you know, maybe when I'm 100. maybe they'll do
what
it.
What was that, Roger?
I'm 100.
Roger
I
snorted.
A little cough.
Roger snorted up there.
He snorted. So has there been anyone that has ever won an Oscar, an Emmy, and a Tony?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
All three?
Several.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There's plenty of people.
Really?
Several, yeah.
Like who?
I don't know, but we've talked about certain people who have done
Emmy,
all of
too.
Those.
You
yeah,
guys
definitely.
Did that quite a while back.
We've talked about a few people who have done that.
I am sort
Roger,
of...
Roger, get on that.
Pretty surprised.
I'm getting right on
that,
it.
That's tough to do.
Emmy,
I mean,
Oscar,
that's
Tony,
tough to
Grammy.
Do.
Yeah. Emmy, yeah.
Audrey Hepburn is one of them.
Oh,
here
great.
Is really? Academy Award, Emmy mm-hmm. Award, Grammy Award, and Tony Awards.
Oh, yeah.
Mel Brooks.
Wow, Mel
Marvin
Brooks.
Marvin Hamlisch.
Yeah.
Audrey Hepburn.
There you go.
John Gielgud.
Wow.
Rita Moreno.
Yes.
Helen Hayes.
Jeez, Rita Moreno.
And Richard Rogers.
Yeah.
Wow, fantastic.
Let me see if there's more.
And Lisa Wolf.
It says,
and Lisa Wolf. I'm working
Lisa
on that.
Lisa wins everything.
You know,
you
I'm the first famous
Mike
Lisa
Nichols?
After Mona Lisa.
Yeah. Can you imagine inviting someone over and saying, oh, by the way, let me just show you over here this cabinet. I just have my Tony, my Oscar, and my Emmy. You
yeah,
know.
No biggie.
Ah. Ah. Right next to my dirty socks.
What was that? That was
better
worse
than
my
the snort, Roger.
Right, it's right next to my dirty socks and my old tennis shoes.
In fact, he's got a sock hanging from his Tony, I'm telling you. Watch it now.
Oh my gosh.
We can give you the dates. Whoopi Goldberg.
Wow, Whoopi.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
She won an Emmy in 2002.
I interviewed her.
1985
not too long ago,
was
here.
A Grammy. 1990 wow. was an Oscar. And 2002, a Tony Award.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
All right, very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah. And I will reveal the whole Kennedy thing a little later.
Oh, please. I can't
wait.
We're
chomping at the bit.
Put my Boston Blackie hat on and solve the case. But right now it's time to get back to this January 18th, 1942 episode of The Great Gildersleeve.
Hey, Morris, wake up and help me. Here comes your brother.
Yeah, who? Yeah.
Yeah, hello, Sam.
At least you could open your eyes, Morris. It's bad enough to have a pill for our brother, but I got to have one that's a sleeping pill. What's this bed you're setting up, Frank?
It's the one we brought back from Miss Gildersleeve's house yesterday.
Oh, yes. Be very careful with it. There's a rumor around that Washington slept in it. However, as of today, the rumor hasn't been verified.
Oh, excuse me, sir, but I was looking for something in a bed.
Pillows, blankets, or sheets?
No. You don't understand. I want a bed for a young lady's room. Something colonial, shall we say?
Sure. Let's say colonial. Colonial. Now, if you'll just follow me, Junior Miss.
Oh, but one moment, please. What about this one that the men are putting together?
Oh, that? Oh, don't give it a second thought. It's too old.
It is? How old?
150, 200, who knows? Now, if you want to see some up-to-date, fresh from the factory colonial beds, I'm the man who's got them.
Oh, no, never mind. This one is just the thing. Imagine a four-poster in such excellent condition. And a Duncan Fife at that.
Please, don't rush me. Remember, this is a genuine agent of wood drunken five. Now, let me see. $30.
But I'm sure that I can use it at that price. I know just the spot where that bed will be right at home. Suppose you send it to my shop on approval. I'm Patricia Van Scudder, dealer in period furniture.
I'm pleased to meet you. I'm Samuel Schlepperman, dealer in furniture, period.
Marge.
Are you sure?
It must be. It came collect.
Yeah. Well, we'll soon see. Oh, Leroy. Telegram for Marjorie.
Yeah? What did she say, huh?
Regarding redecoration, before you dispose of old bed, be sure to unscrew the left front knob and fish out my string of pearls. What does she mean, Leroy?
Oh, I remember. She sometimes uses the hollow bedpost as a kind of secret jewel box. Where are you going, Uncle Mort?
Into Marjorie's room to unscrew the old great Caesar's ghost. That was the bed we traded in at Schlepperman's. Now, Leroy, getting those pearls out of the bed in Schlepperman's is a job that requires tact and delicacy.
You're right, Uncle Mort. You wait here and I'll go in by myself.
Yeah, wait a minute, young man. I'm going to do this job myself. If you care to, you can come along and whistle if you see anybody coming.
Okay. Any particular tune you want me to whistle?
Well, no. I can just, well.
Hello, Stanza. Hello, Leroy. Coming back for another bed?
Hello, Slepperman. No, Leroy and I are just out window shopping.
Oh, of course. What kind do you want? Plate glass, thin glass, or plate glass?
You don't understand. Leroy and I just want to look around. You don't mind our browsing, I hope?
Oh, no. I do a lot of that myself. You should see me browsing over a herring. Somehow, suppose I show you around.
Oh, no. Don't trouble yourself.
Ah, trouble, he says. Why, my time is your time. What's your time?
11:30. I mean, we can look around by ourselves.
Oh, let me show you. Yeah. Say, you might miss some of the little gems that are hidden around this store.
Quiet, Leroy.
I wasn't going to say anything, Unc.
Yes. But really, Sam, don't bother to come along. We'll feel freer to...
To help ourselves.
Yes, that's it. We may dig out something we consider valuable if we're left alone.
Yeah, at least we hope so. Yeah.
All right. And if you find what you want, SOS me PDQ. And I'll be there in a flash for the cash.
Yes, flash for the cash. Come on, Leroy. Are we out of sight?
Yeah. Can you see it, Unc?
Well, here's a four-poster. But the knobs and the posts are solid.
Here are some more, Unc.
Good. I'll be as quiet as a little... Oh, quiet. Oh, that's me.
Say, how about this one?
No, Leroy, leave it alone. This isn't Marjorie's bed. It's the wrong color and it hasn't any posts. And besides, Morris is sleeping in it.
There's Mr. Schlepperman coming this way.
Good. Maybe I can pump him about it, huh?
My eyes are smiling. There you are.
Yes, here we are. By the way, Sam, you remember that old bed of Marjorie's you took in trade?
Sure. What about it?
Well, I was just wondering what had become of it. Not that I was looking for it.
Oh, no.
Why, that bed sold like a hotcake.
What? You sold it?
What? You want it back?
Well, sort of. I got to thinking about it, Sam. You know, it was really Marjorie's.
Yeah, and she put a lot of value on that bed.
I didn't realize it myself until just recently. In fact, I never should have traded it into you.
Well, if that's the case, maybe I can get it back for you.
You can? How?
The lady who bought it took it away on approval.
Huh?
Possibly if I go to her before she makes up her mind and somehow or the other raise the price, she might turn the bed down.
Oh, that's great. I'll see that you don't lose on the deal, Sam. I know you can put it across.
You do? I wish I did.
Do you want me to come along and help you?
No, I think you might complicate the situation. You know, Truckee, in negotiations for antiquities, it needs the cool, experienced head of an old hand with a near to the ground to put the best foot forward.
Well, hello, Mr. Schlepperman. Come in. What can I do for you?
This is just a bus driver's holiday, whatever it is, of course. Now that I'm here, I might as well inquire if you want to keep that bed you took on approval.
Well, the young lady I'm buying it for is still out of town.
Well, I've got a buyer who wants that bed right now. In fact, he says he'll pay up to $40 for it.
Oh, that's too bad.
I hate to be pressing you, but could you give me a quick yes or no?
Wait, I think I can get an answer for you right away. Excuse me, won't you?
But certainement.
Marjorie isn't home yet.
Oh, but I don't want Marjorie. This is Patricia Van Scudder, Mr. Gildersleeve, and I have the nicest news for you.
Yes?
I found just the bed for Marjorie's room.
Well, isn't that nice?
Yes. Wait till you see it. You'll be speechless.
Well, I bet I'll find something to say.
Now, the only thing is this. How much are you willing to pay?
Pay? Oh, anywhere up to 50, 60, even 75, if you think it's worth it.
Oh, thank you. That's all I wanted to know. Goodbye. Well, Mr. Schlepperman, I think we can do business. My client will pay more than that $40 offer you had.
Is that a fact? Pardon me. Could you be so kindly as to let me use your telephone?
Oh, surely. Go right ahead. It's in my office there.
Thank you. I'll be back instantaneously.
Yep. Who is it now?
Hello, Truckee. This is Slepperman. I've located that bed of Marjorie's.
You have? Good.
But there has developed complications.
Oh, what's the trouble?
Those people who have it now are willing to pay a good stiff price, maybe $50, $60.
Well, I'll give you more than they will. The crooks.
Whatever their bid is, I'll pay $10 more. As high as, say, $100.
All right, you're the doctor. Goodbye, Doc. Well, Miss Venskuda, I just talked to my client, and he says he'll pay $50 for that bed.
Oh, but my people won't let him take it for that. They'll give $60.
$60 is a nice price. But this fella so is no cheapskate. He says $70.
My clients are just as stubborn as yours. We say $75.
I'm sorry, but my man will top their offer $85.
Well, afraid he's got us licked. Too bad. They'll be disappointed. Well, you can send your truck over to pick up the bed whenever you want to.
Oh, I don't have to do that. Hey, Frank!
Yes, Mr. Stuckerman?
Wake up, Mars, and come in here. George Washington's bed rides again. Careful, boys. Put it down easy. There you are, Mr. Gildingsleeve. Safely and soundly.
Yes, well, thank you very much, Lee Sam. Now, if you and your men will wait outside for just a moment.
Precisely. Come on, boys.
At last, Leroy.
Gee, which knob is it, Uncle?
The left front one. Ah, I've got it. Here's something. By George, it's the missing pearls.
Boy, what a relief. Say, now that you have the jewels, what are you going to do with the bed? Maybe Mr. Schlepperman will buy it back.
Oh, that's silly, Leroy. He just went to an awful lot of trouble persuading somebody to let me have it. Say, I've got to thank him about that. Oh, Sam, I want you to know that I appreciate all the trouble you've gone to get this bed back for me. Thanks very much.
Oh, don't mention it. It was a mere trifle. On a big scale, of course.
Yes.
I was really up against a determined woman. For a little while, it looked like I'd have to kidnap it.
Kidnap it? Is that so? Well, I wonder if she still wants the bed.
Oh, yes. Why, if I walked into her place right now with that bed, she'd cover me with kisses. Heavens forbid.
Well, in that case, why not let her have it?
Excuse me, I don't think I heard you right. Did you say let her have it?
Yes, I didn't realize she wanted it so badly. I don't want to be so selfish about all this.
Well, I'll be a dog in the manger.
Yes.
After all I've been through, too. Guilty? If you sell it again, what will Marjorie say when she finds out?
Oh, don't worry. That's all fixed. Someone has found a bed that'll make her forget all about this one.
Well, that's fine. I'll take it back to the other party.
Yeah?
Oh, Frank! Oh, Morris!
Yes, boss?
What is it, Sammy? What do you want?
Go get the bed and put it on the truck again.
But we're taking it apart and put it together four times already. I'm getting tired.
Say, what do you want me to do? Install zippers? Go, go, go!
I'm sorry to give you all this trouble, Schlepperman.
My trouble. This is a dandy bed. I've done more business with this one single article this week than I have with all the rest of my stock put together. Miss Van Scooter, I've got a surprise for you.
Who is it? Oh, Mr. Schlepperman, what is it?
Do you remember that lovely George Washington flute bed? Well, I had to talk myself blue in the face, but I got it back for you.
You did? Oh, you little dear, I could kiss you.
Oh, please, please, I'm a married man. Do you want the bed?
Oh, yes.
Then everything is peaches down in Florida.
You mean in Georgia?
Ever been to Florida? Oh, Frank! Oh, Morris! In again!
Oh, there it is. Won't Marjorie Forrester be pleased when she gets this bed?
Why, yes, of course. What? Are you giving this bed to Marjorie Forrester?
Oh, no.
Oh, that's good.
I'm not giving it to her. Her uncle, Mr. Gildersleeve, is.
You don't mean by any chance Throckmorton P. Gildingsleeve? A large, deep man with a thick voice.
Why, yes. Are you a friend of his?
Speaking strictly from the past, yes.
Well, the next time I see him, I'll tell him I met you.
I don't think that'll be necessary. He'll know it. Well, goodbye, Miss Van Scuda. And if I don't see you again, don't take any more wooden beds.
Ah, it's been a lovely day, hasn't it, Leroy?
Yeah, makes a man glad that he's alive.
Yeah. Anything happen while we were out, Bertie?
Nothing, only that Van Scudder lady's in Miss Marge's bedroom with some furniture.
Huh?
Wouldn't let me get anywhere near it. Claims it to be a surprise for you.
Oh, yes, the new bed. Well, I'm anxious to see it, Bertie. She says it's going to bowl me over.
Dear, maybe it's all ready now. Come on, Unc.
All right, come along, Bertie.
Yes, sir. You're making so much fuss over that bed, you'd think George Washington slept in it.
Yes.
Who is it?
Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, just a second. It's almost ready. There. Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yes?
I want you to see the room properly. Ready?
This better be good. Yes, I'm ready.
Close your eyes.
Yes.
Now, I'll count three, and then you can open them. One, two, three.
Well, it's very... Oh. I don't get it, lady.
Don't get what?
This room looks just like it did before.
I know, but the bed. That's the one I had so much trouble buying for you.
But that's...
Oh, my.
Yes, that's the same bed that was there in the first place.
Oh, no. I picked this bed up at a tremendous bargain, $150.
Oh, great jumping jeeps, $150.
But it's absolutely authentic. George Washington slept in it.
Oh!
Hey, just back off, fella, lady. The hurricane is here.
No.
No. Come on. Calm down, Uncle.
Yes.
After all, you got back Marjorie's valuable pearls.
Yes.
What's all this talk about Miss Marjorie's valuable pearls? There's nothing but imitation pearls.
What? No, oh, that makes it all the worse. I'm getting dizzy. Leroy, bring me a chair.
Come on, here. Sit down on the bed, Uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me help you over. Yeah.
Thanks. What's this big lump under the bedspread? Morris, you get out of here.
Huh? All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, our president will soon reach his 60th birthday. We can all help him celebrate. We can show him our deep regard and affection by contributing to a cause that's very close to his heart, your local Fight Infantile Paralysis campaign. Let's all say happy birthday, Mr. Roosevelt, by aiding the fight against this enemy of our children. Good night.
Music heard on this program was composed and conducted by William Randolph. This is Jim Bannon speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to be with us again next week at the same time for the further adventures of The Great Gildersleeve. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
And that is The Great Gildersleeve, January 18th, 1942, with a new bed, starring Hal Perry. Also in the cast, Walter Tetley as Leroy and Lillian Randolph as Bertie on that show. And a great show is heard on NBC, sponsored by Kraft. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Okay. Placing a loved one in a nursing home is one of life's most difficult decisions. You deserve only the best care for your loved one in return. Sadly, nursing home negligence is real and it's a serious problem. Neglect and abuse of the elderly happen every day. The law firm of Konasek and Dillon wants you to know that nursing home negligence can cause serious, life-threatening medical conditions like dehydration and malnutrition, fractures, infections, pressure sores, and even death. If you suspect a loved one is a victim of negligence or abuse in a nursing home, call Konasek and Dillon. The law firm of Konasek and Dillon will advise and help your family through the painful ordeal of injuries or death caused by nursing home negligence. Konasek and Dillon understands that entrusting a loved one to a nursing home is one of life's most difficult decisions. Protect your loved ones. Call Konasek and Dillon at 630-262-9655. Consultations are always free. Call Konasek and Dillon at 630-262-9655. We're back. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
I'm 1/12 Latina, and even if I wasn't, I'm 100% human, so I don't appreciate comments like that.
We are talking to Jeff from Aurora. Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
Who is that actress? I'm so good, Jeff. How are you?
I am well.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, you're listening to WGN Radio Theater. I don't think it can get better than that. But who is that star?
Oh, I know. That is Kristen Bell.
You are right, Jeff. I'm so excited to give you an iFly indoor skydiving gift certificate. You are going to learn to fly, and you're going to get the help of iFly certified instructors, and it's a fantastic experience at iFly. So you can check them out at iflyworld.com. This is for the Lincoln Park location, and I hope you absolutely love it, Jeff.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun.
You're welcome, Jeff.
Oh, awesome. Looking forward to it.
Great.
Thanks for calling in. And the answer was Kristen Bell.
Kristen Bell, exactly.
Yes. Enjoy your night.
All right, you too, Jeff. Thanks, buddy. All right, so it's time for Escape. You ready for this, Lisa?
I sure am.
Radio's greatest series of high adventure began in 1947, lasted seven seasons on the radio. William Conrad and Paul Frees were the voices of Escape, and they often played roles in the episodes also as well. It was a cousin to Suspense, but didn't have the star power or budget, and it had very few sponsors. I don't know why, because Suspense was always sponsored.
Right.
Escape, only for a very short time, had Richfield Oil as a sponsor, but it used radio's best supporting actors, people like Harry Bartell and Joseph Kearns, Ben Wright, John Daner. They were the stars of Escape. And it started out with tired of the everyday grind, ever dream of a life of romantic adventure, want to get away from it all? We offer you
Escape.
Escape. Okay, so this episode goes back to April 1st, 1954. It's called The Return, and it stars Lawrence Dobkin and William Conrad. Here's part one of Escape.
Tired of the everyday grind, ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Standing at the entrance of a walled Arab town, while behind you, coming slowly through the night, are the shuffling footsteps of a blind beggar who will lead you into a harrowing world of darkness and terror.
Listen now as Escape brings you Kathleen Height's terrifying story, The Return.
The freighter Menlo crept slowly through the breakwater of the outer harbor. Most of the 12 passengers were on deck, looking north beyond the converging jetties to the modern city of Bizerta. The two of us, a man named Tuckett and myself, Bizerta was a destination. I didn't know what brought Tuckett here. I didn't really know what brought me here. I only knew that I'd looked for something all over the world without success. I'd looked everywhere except Bizerta. Ashore, I checked in at a small hotel, and a short time later, I was part of the early evening crowd on the streets.
Bakshish, Effendi. Bakshish.
Yeah, there you go.
Mashallah, mashallah, Effendi.
Sure. Can you tell me how to get to the Arab town? Oh. Sorry, I didn't notice about your eyes.
One does not need eyes to perceive truth, Effendi.
No, I suppose not. What's your name?
Nigga.
Nigga.
The Arab town is north, due north of here. And the truth is everywhere for all to see, if they will but see.
I hope you're right. Well, bye, nigga.
Saida, Effendi. Bakshish. Bakshish.
It is Mr. Reeser, isn't it?
Tuckett.
I lost track of you when we came ashore. Thought I'd find you again at the hotel, but they tell me you're not registered.
Where are you staying?
Hotel North Africa. How about joining me there for dinner, if you don't have any plans?
I don't think I have any plans.
But if I do, they can catch up with me there, don't you think?
Yes, I guess they can.
My words hadn't meant much more to me than they did to Tuckett. I tried to explain during dinner. Maybe it was the wine that was talking, maybe me. Either way, Tuckett seemed interested enough to ask a question.
Have you any idea what you're looking for, Reeser?
I'm looking for a place where there's no struggle.
No struggle for you?
For anyone. I'm 40 years old, Tuckett. And for a little over half my lifetime, I've traveled the world.
Uh-huh.
Worked my way, worked the sea and the earth. I tell you, there's only one thing that's universal, and that's the struggle.
I suppose that's right. But it seems to me we're making a lot of progress in some directions. Now, medicine, for example.
Medicine's a good example. They lick pneumonia, they found cancer waiting for them. They inoculate for smallpox, and they find bubonic plague. For every achievement, there's a new struggle waiting. And I wonder if that's progress, Tuckett.
Well, I don't know. I never thought of it this way.
Well, take food, clothing, and shelter, the basic needs.
Uh-huh.
Some parts of the world, people don't have them. But even when they do, there are bigger struggles to take their place. Fears, insecurities. Maybe you beat these things one at a time. But you've never got it made. While you're fighting against one struggle, another one's being fed and made strong. And it never ends until you die struggling to live.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny in a way. You come to Bezerra hoping you'll find a place where there's no struggle. And I've come here, well, to get into the struggle, I guess. I'm opening an import-export business, small and I'm sure full of struggle. But I'm not cynical about it or disillusioned yet.
No, I don't feel cynical, Tuckett. I'm just short on hope, because I don't see any end in sight.
Reeser, what would you change if it were up to you?
The struggle. Show me a place where there's no struggle. That's where I want to be.
I wonder what it would be like. If you find it, let me know, will you?
If I can, I will. I promised I'd get in touch with Tuckett in a few days, but as I went back to the streets of Bezerra, walking through the fine rain that was falling now, I wondered if I'd ever see him again. My course took me north, along the canal, through the modern city, past the ancient citadel, to the entrance of the walled Arab town. I passed no one, and yet I knew I was not alone. Someone was following behind me. Soon I heard his footsteps at my side.
We are almost there, Effendi.
Nega, you're walking without your cane to lead you.
I am come to lead you, Effendi.
Where?
Through the wall ahead. Your words have been heard, Effendi. You are ready?
Ready for what?
You have said, show me the place where there is no struggle.
How do you know what I've said?
You have asked enough questions of life, Effendi. Come. We go through the wall.
Oh, you're out of your mind.
Look about you, Effendi. On all sides, there are walls. You have come too far to go back.
What are you talking about? I can't go back.
You have said the words, show me the place. Through the wall ahead is the perfect place. I will lead you there.
Oh, this is crazy. You're crazy. You're blind. You can't lead me anywhere. Let go of me.
You yourself have said that struggle is useless.
I said let go of me, you filthy old... I had swung at Nega with all the force in me, only to find myself flattened against the wall. Did I slip on the wet pavement or trip? I don't know. That was no imaginary wall I had hit. I felt the hard pain of it and the rain beating against my face.
And then it was over. The room in which I awakened was large. Large and empty, with great windows at the far end, bright sunlight streaming through them. There was no room I'd ever seen before. My clothes were no longer damp, and there was no pain in me. I moved toward the sunlight.
You were a long time coming, Risa.
I don't see you.
Come out of the shadows toward the light. You will find me.
Oh.
Now you can see me, can you not?
Yes, now I see you. You seem to know me. I've never seen you before.
I am called Zine. You are most welcome, Risa. Yours has been a tortuous trip, I know.
I don't understand. That beggar, that old fool, he said he was leading me to the perfect place.
The important thing is that you are here, Risa. Come. Look through the windows.
Oh. Oh. Oh, this is beautiful. Mountains, valley, lakes, fields. Never seen anything like it.
It is perfect. You are in the perfect place because you want to be here. You looked the world over. You witnessed the struggle. You wanted to be free of it.
Am I dead?
Do you feel dead?
No, I don't. I feel confused. There's so much I don't understand. I have questions.
You will begin to see the answers for yourself once the processing has begun.
Processing?
There are things you must give up for perfection, Risa. In the processing, these things will leave you. One of them is written in your expression now, doubt. You cannot doubt perfection and have it too. And after that, you must give up fear and greed. Will you miss them, Risa?
No, of course not.
There are other things, of course. Whenever you have questions, you will find me nearby to answer them. Do you have any more questions now?
No.
Then you are ready. Go on, my son. Go out and live in the perfect place. You hesitate. Why?
I don't know. Surely there's nothing to fear from perfection.
You would not think so, would you, my son?
I went out the door, down the path, into the perfect place. The hesitation, the fear grew less with each step. I turned a short distance away to wave back at Zine, but the door I had walked through was gone, and the building and the window, and there was no sign of Zine, but somehow it seemed unimportant. I turned back to the path and walked ahead.
Hello, my love.
Hello.
I am Angela.
Angela.
You are Risa and my love. I knew you would be here when I wanted you most.
You were expecting me? You knew I would be here.
I wanted you.
Oh.
Take my hand. We will walk together, won't we?
I think we will. Angela.
Oh, my love. Ours will be a lovely time together. Perfectly lovely.
You are listening to The Return, tonight's presentation on Escape.
All right, that's the first portion of Escape with the return from April 1st, 1954. Lawrence Dobkin starring in that along with William Conrad. Hope you're enjoying Escape. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. They're working me to the bone over here. Aleph made me and Lisa do a video-licious thing. I don't know what that means, but they're just, I don't have a moment's rest doing, when the shows are on, Aleph was over here.
Well, Carl likes to take a snooze and we don't let him.
The whip. She
there will
like,
be no snoozes.
So Lisa and I just recreated a small sliver from Sorry Wrong Number, the suspense radio show, and Lisa was Mrs. Albert Stevenson, played by Agnes Moorehead in
yes.
the original radio show,
yep.
and I played the police sergeant Matheson.
Well,
Madison.
Could be Agnes Moorehead.
And
but
when is that gonna? Where it's gonna go up on our post or what? What's going on? I don't know anything about this kind of stuff.
This week.
Oh, it's gonna go up on our Facebook page.
On yes.
If we're real nice.
Yes.
All right. So we Elif just videotaped us. It's a new thing we're doing here, right? It's a new social media thing
yeah.
that we're doing. Okay.
We're trying to stay relevant.
Because I'm so up on social media.
Yes, you are.
Right.
You're
right.
Just so up.
Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'd have to crack some eggs, Roger, to
yes,
bake
you
a
do.
Cake.
Okay.
Right? To make a souffle, you got to crack eggs,
yes,
too.
Yes, you do.
Right?
But don't make any noise.
And to make an omelet, you got to crack some eggs.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
And to be emperor.
I'm just saying. It's
crack
like
some
a,
heads.
You got to crack some heads to be
right.
emperor.
It's an analogy.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
But if you make me emperor, I'll straighten this whole thing out. All this craziness. And I mean, there is some craziness going on in this world right now, right?
Yeah, it's a crazy world.
I mean,
there.
I don't know what the heck happened. It's like I don't know if I'm Rip Van Winkle or whatever. I woke up and it's like the whole world's messed up.
I think it's another.
Drives me nuts.
Like another episode of Suspense or something.
Yeah.
The Twilight
you know?
Zone.
And there's
Twilight
so
Zone.
Much fighting. I mean, I know Lisa and I bicker a little, but we really.
Well, that's expected.
We love each other. We're yeah. best friends. We bicker, but we do it. It's part of our shtick. But you know what? The world is messed up, Roger.
Mm-hmm.
Something's gotta happen here.
You know, by the power of Grayskull, I will appoint you emperor.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I saw a good movie tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I saw a really, really good movie. You should check this movie
I'll
out.
I'll bite.
It's called Suicide Squad.
Oh, you did see it?
Yeah, I saw Suicide
yeah?
Squad.
Yeah? You liked it?
And I heard that it was not that great. It
yeah.
was fantastic.
Good.
I mean, Will Smith was so great in this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I read some not-so-great reviews, but I did not see it.
Margot Robbie or Robbie Margot, whatever her name
Margot
is.
Robbie.
Margot Robbie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I date her.
He says that about everybody, doesn't he,
I would definitely
Roger?
Date her. Yeah. Margot Robbie.
But the point is, would she date you?
Oh, definitely.
Oh,
what
really?
Are you kidding? Carl Amari?
That is
from
not
WGN
even,
Radio
I'm sorry
Theater?
I asked the question.
That's
I'm
a
sorry.
Silly question.
Roger.
Well, you know, the world's crazy, and I was caught up
Roger,
in the craziness. I'm so sorry.
I'm really,
I apologize.
You know
really
what, Roger? I'm
yeah.
going to just
you.
Pretend you didn't even say that. Because I like you way
I'm disappointed in him.
It's way too much for me.
I hear she's going to call you, though.
I'm not going to hold a grudge or anything like that. But, yeah, I would date her. Yeah, definitely.
I'm going to see if I can work that out for you.
Yeah. Right, so, well,
Lisa knows everybody.
You know what? Yeah. Well, let's tune into the conclusion to Escape
it's
and then
time.
send her a text or an email or something.
I'm going to give her a call.
See if she's if she wants to go out next week.
I'll work on it for you.
All right, let's get back to this broadcast from April 1st, 1954. It's called The Return. Here's the conclusion to Escape.
And now Escape and the second act of The Return.
Angela was all of beauty, all of woman. She was grace and strength and delicacy. And she was always at my side as we walked the broad valleys of the perfect place. She was my love, and it was a perfect love. The land was all beauty. The people were all smiles. Every need was satisfied. There was love in abundance. Peace and perfection was at every hand. And there was no struggle, No struggle about anything. After a time, when I felt the need of a friend appeared. He was Lar, Angela's brother. Lar loved the sea, and he had a fine schooner for fishing.
Angela tells me you enjoy fishing, Reeser. Name your fish, and I promise you boatloads of it.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I have no preference. Any fighting game fish is fine sport.
The day is perfect. The wind is perfect. Everything we need is aboard.
It's all very easy, isn't it?
It is as it should be. For fishing, we need wind and sail and sea and fish. So we have them.
Hard to believe.
It's there to see and believe.
The wind is failing.
Then this must be the spot. The best waters.
Best?
We would not have stopped here if they were not the best.
Nice arrangement. Well, where's the gear?
The lines are out. They are just right. Go, see for yourself.
It's a strike, Mark. A strike here on the starboard line.
Pull him in, Reeser. Yeah. He's all yours.
Oh, it's albacore. And a giant. But he stopped fighting. There's no fight in him.
Pull him in, Reeser. He's a perfect albacore. Perfect.
I never saw a fish give in so quickly. Practically jumped onto the deck. And it kept on that way. All day, every fish that found our lines fairly flopped into the schooner of its own volition. Laura had promised me a boatload of fish, and we had them when Angela met us in port at evening. There had been no struggle, no effort even in lifting the great fish off the lines. It was phenomenal and rather frightening. Some days later, Angela suggested a deer hunt. With Lar, we walked through the beautiful countryside, through fields, toward the wooded hills.
Look ahead, my love. Set your sights.
Oh, yes.
The first shot is yours, Reeser.
All right.
You see, love? Directly ahead. Perfect deer.
Yes, I see. Perfect deer. 30 or 40 of them all lined up as targets. Couldn't miss one if I tried.
Fire, Reeser.
Oh, I can't.
You wanted deer. Well, there they are.
Now, Angela, listen to me. Don't you see? We haven't hunted for deer. Now, part of the thrill of hunting is the hunt itself, and then the finding of your game and matching your wits against his. If you win, then you've won something.
But you said you wanted deer.
And when we fished, you said you wanted fish.
Look, if I had said I wanted to hunt bear instead of deer, then all the bear I could shoot would be in the sights of my gun? Or if I'd said quail or duck, the sky overhead had been black with them? Is that true?
Yes. Yes, my love. That is all true.
Yes. Yes, perfect. Like all things.
Oh, but that isn't perfect. Can't I make you see that? Oh. Look, Angela, you and Lar, would you just go on a little, would you? I want to be alone a while.
Of course, darling. That's perfectly all right with me.
Perfectly.
Perfectly. I turned then and I walked in no direction toward no place. Inside, I was all fury and confusion. And something more. Didn't know why, but I was reacting to the constant smiles of Angela and Lar with something like terror. And then I stopped and lay in a spot of cool green grass to rest and think. And not think.
What are your questions, Reese?
Zane.
I said I'd be nearby to answer when you needed me.
It's hard to question. I just find perfection difficult to understand.
Do you doubt it, the perfection?
No. No, I've seen and known many perfect things here.
You wanted assurance there was no struggle here in the perfect place. You have seen no struggle, have you, Reese?
No, none. But now you must see everything. The fish, the deer, they have no fight in them. There's no sport, there's no challenge.
You wanted no struggle. You cannot have both struggle and no struggle. You once berated existence as a thing men struggled through and died struggling to live.
Well, I know.
Your processing will go on, Risa. Step by step, it will go on. There will be no struggle. And you will realize that you cannot improve on perfection.
And when I turned to answer Zine, he was gone again, as I knew he would be. He was gone, but the terror was still with me. There was goodness and kindness. There was plenty. Why did I fear it? What was its terror? My thoughts went to Angela, and soon we were together again, as if nothing other than perfection had passed between us. She took me into a village I had not seen. The life there was simple, but perfect.
Is it not beautiful here, my love? Is not everything and everyone beautiful?
Angela, what do all the people of the village do?
Do?
How do they live? Do they work? Are there jobs to do?
Everyone does what he wants.
No. Who tills the fields and plants them? Who builds the homes?
So many questions always, my love. And questions about the simplest of things. The fields. One goes there when one wants something and one finds it. The homes, they're just here.
Nothing to be achieved because all things have been achieved. There is no work because all the work has been done.
That sounds very well. Does it please you?
Yes, I guess it does.
Oh, look, the men at the canvases across the way. Oh. They're painting. Is that doing something?
Oh, let's have a look.
What lovely paintings. Perfectly lovely, are they not?
Oh, this one's quite a good landscape.
And this one here. Do look at this one, Risa. You see? Perfectly lovely.
Oh, they're just the same. They're identical. Every flower, the tree, the hill, just the same in color and size. Angela.
What is it, darling?
Three men painting pictures, and each picture is exactly like the others.
There is just one perfect landscape of this sort. How could it be otherwise? There is only one way to be, to do, to paint, and that is perfect.
And there's just one perfect book because there's just one perfect way to set words down?
Of course, my love. The perfect way.
Oh, no, no.
I wish Lar were here.
Tell me this perfection. Is it conformity?
Angela, you wished me here.
Lar, he's full of questions.
Just one question, Lar. Is perfection conformity? Must everyone think and do and act and write and paint in just one way?
There is just one perfect way.
Oh, no, Zine didn't say I'd have to give up all the things that make me me, or that I couldn't work toward goals of achievement, or that I must give up challenge in order to live in the perfect place.
You are so different, Reeser.
Angela, what if I should leave you? What if I were no longer your love? Would that be all right with you?
If that is what you wish, perfectly all right, darling.
Perfectly.
Oh, you're crazy. Oh, Tuckett ought to be here. Oh, he should see what I've seen. He'd laugh his head off at me.
Tuckett?
Yeah, Tuckett. Someone with a chance to work and dream and set goals for himself. And make mistakes, honest mistakes. And gamble. To win or lose, he can take his chances.
I think this Tuckett must be a very strange man.
And I think this is something I've been wanting to do for a long time.
What an odd gesture. I've never seen one man strike another before.
Come on, Locke, get up. Let's make a good fight of it, huh? Let's make a perfect fight.
Your hand becomes a peculiar color.
You won't fight back? You won't fight back. Because there's no struggle here.
You mentioned this word, struggle, often. Is it a good word, struggle?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is. They were smiling when I left. The whole village was smiling broadly, and they waved at me happily. I ran, and I walked, and I ran again. The mountains surrounding the great valley were tall and steep. I had to get through or around or over them somehow. I had to escape the perfect place.
You have further questions, Lisa?
Just one, Zine. How do I get out of here?
Get out? You want to leave the perfect place?
Yes, and I am leaving, and you can't stop me.
I would not try to stop you if you really want to go. I will show you the way.
This is no trap?
No. There is one thing.
Yeah?
If you go, you can never return.
That's fine with me. In fact, that's perfect.
You'll be going back to the struggle.
This perfection is filthy. It's vicious, insidious.
You prefer the struggle, then?
To this? Oh, yes. Yeah, the struggle is wrong. It shouldn't have to be. But we'll work on it, every succeeding generation. At least there's work to be done, and the incentive is there to do it. Oh, brother, wait till I tell people about this perfect place.
Yes, Risa. Tell them you found the perfect place. Tell them about the beauty, the perfection, about Angela and La and me. Tell them you were here and you saw it, that there's no struggle. Tell them you saw all this and ran. Will anyone believe you?
My lips formed an answer, but no words came. And suddenly there was no Zine and no perfect place. Only the rain beating on my face as I lay at the foot of a high wall. I felt the hard pain in my back. And then I remembered it all. The beggar, Bizerta, the walled Arab town beyond. It couldn't have happened very long before. It couldn't have lain there long. I remembered that Tuckett was staying at the Hotel North Africa, and I hurried there to him. Tuckett! Tuckett, open the door! Tuckett!
Good heavens, what's all the racket about?
I'm sorry. I was anxious to find you again. I got in a fight down in the native quarter, which was a mistake because I've been lying wet and cold in some back alley for an hour or so.
Why, it's Reeser, isn't it?
What? Well, of course, man. Oh, look, don't you remember at dinner earlier this evening?
Reeser, of course. And I remember the dinner. I haven't seen you since, but after all, I should remember it was only a year ago.
Under the direction of Norman McDonald, Escape has brought you The Return by Kathleen Height, starring Lawrence Dobkin. Featured in the cast were Edgar Berrier, Paul Dubov, Gene Bates, Howard Culver, and Lou Krugman. Your announcer, George Walsh. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. You hear America's favorite shows on the CBS Radio Network.
And that's Escape, going back to April 1st, 1954, with The Return. And that starred Lawrence Dobkin along with Edgar Berrier, Paul Dubov, Gene Bates, Howard Culver, Lou Krugman. Good cast. William Conrad was the announcer and the voice of Escape from that broadcast called The Return. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. You know what? Dave Plyer just walked in, and he has a big guest on the show this morning. A big, big guest. What's up, David?
Are we on the air?
We're on the air, sir.
What's going on, guys?
We count on you for only the biggest guest.
Oh,
Dave.
Please. Oh, no.
We were bragging about you to each other.
Yeah. Oh, stop.
We were like, man, David books huge guests.
It's fun.
Love it.
It's fun. I'm a dork.
And is that the Joey syndrome? Is that the Joey connection? Is Joey working on that for you,
Joey,
too?
Joey, who do we have on the show? oh, hey, Liv, how are you?
I mean, do you have this just incredible Rolodex? I mean, this is a big name here.
I'm building a Rolodex, but you know what? I run a small business. I'm a sales guy, and so I'm a bulldog. And so I kind of bulldog when I'm looking for guests. And when I want somebody, man, I think we go after them.
I'll tell you what. So reveal to the listeners.
Oh, we've got Ann B. Davis from the... No, she's dead. from the Brady Bunch show. Who do we have on today's show? It's terrible. We've got Mike Love from the Beach Boys.
There we go.
Very cool. And he's going to be at the Wisconsin State Fair tonight, which I'm going to go see him live, which is going to be a lot of fun. And he's got a new book coming out in the fall. And who doesn't know the Beach Boys, gosh. Right?
Yeah. Right.
Favorite song? Do you have one?
Wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice? Okay. Which is
California
also a movie,
Girls.
Too. California Girls. Okay. Yeah.
So did you talk to him at all about the movie that came out that John Cusack was in? Did you talk to him a little bit? Because I didn't see the movie.
Yeah.
But I heard it was really, really good.
No, have not.
And
maybe I'll mention that to him.
Yeah.
Did you also know that John Stamos plays with the band? He tours with them.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah,
Lisa has a major crush on John Stamos.
He's my guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's also on a new show. We're going to try to get him for a...
Yes.
He's on Scream Queens or something on Fox.
Yeah.
He's going to
start
working
on. I know he's on a new show. Yeah.
But he tours with the Beach Boys.
You know, the last time I saw the Beach Boys...
He plays the drums?
For like 25 years he's been doing that.
Last time I saw the Beach Boys was at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas so many years ago. Outside. They did a concert there.
There was an episode of Full House.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
They were at the beach or
That's
something.
Right.
And the Beach Boys were playing, and Stamos got up and played with them.
And played with them. Yeah, they're buddies. And then Johnny Mathis was in at the Rosemont Theater tonight. Legendary Johnny Mathis. 57 years with Columbia Records, if you think about that. And so he's actually going to call in tonight, or actually toward morning, because I think he's going out all night. He's going to get some steaks and have some cocktails.
Yep.
So we'll talk to Johnny. No sleigh ride. We're not going to do any Christmas music tonight.
Thank you.
Because that's what I think of when you think of Johnny Mathis, right?
We appreciate that.
What a class act he is.
There's all kinds of good stuff coming up, man.
Well, that's great. We'll be listening. And when Lisa and I are back here tonight at 11 p.m., we have the Green Hornet Suspense and the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show, so you don't want to miss that.
Yeah, a whole pile of goodness.
Yeah, we really do. We bring it here on WGN.
You do.
All of us do.
Yeah,
we bring it because this is the best radio station on the planet.
It is, absolutely.
And when Roger makes me emperor of the planet, I'm going to make sure WGN...
Does he have that power?
WGN is the only station. I'm going to get rid of all the other stations. I'm going to crack some eggs. I'm getting rid of all the other stations.
It's very late, Dave.
Now realizing why I can't adjust my headphone. I'm connected over there and sitting over here. Now I'm realizing the problem here.
And you know what?
Sorry.
I didn't get
studio stuff. You won't have to worry about that anymore.
I won't have to worry about it.
And I didn't get
anymore.
To reveal... I solved the whole Kennedy assassination and the whole... Because I was in Dallas last week.
Jimmy Hoffa?
Solved the whole thing.
What about Jimmy Hoffa?
We'll have to wait because you're on the air now. I have to wait. So I don't want to take up any of your time.
Okay.
But when I come back tonight, I will reveal what I found out
we
while I was in Dallas.
We are chomping at the bit here.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So it is.
Oh, I have to ask you one more question. Is Elif now producing both nights?
Yes.
Oh, I'm very excited about that.
We are too.
Doesn't that make sense
to
you?
We love Elif.
Yeah. Some continuity.
We bat for her.
We love that.
I think that's the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, Elif.
Yeah.
Nice work.